Welcome to On The Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. In today's episode, I sit down with New York comedian Andy Gold. I kind of got to know Andy here and there over the last few years. I would bump into him at comedy clubs. And as he came back to Utah, I decided to catch him while he was in town and sit down and talk with him about what he's been up to in New York. He's getting ready right now to go out to California for a few different comedy festivals. So learn a little bit about what he's doing there, what some of his upcoming plans are. I know right now he's also prepping for the Seattle Comedy Festival as well as the Boston Comedy Festival. So we sit with Andy and talk, you know, about what got him started in comedy, what inspires him, and just a little bit more about who he is. And yeah, he's a great comedian for everybody to get to know. I definitely suggest checking him out if he's going to be performing in your hometown. Andy joined me up at Trolley Square. We've done a few episodes up at Trolley Square, and it's always a good place to meet up. It's right in the heart of Salt Lake City, right next to the Wise Guys Comedy Club there. So you know, it's somewhere we're familiar. It feels at home there. So I hope you guys all enjoy this episode with comedian Andy Gold.
I love street jokes, man. I'm such a sucker for filthy, horrible street jokes. I had an idea in New York where I wanted to go to Times Square and make a character. I'm probably not going to do it because I don't have the balls, but I have like blonde hair, red cheeks, I'm chubby. I look like a baby. I wanted to dress as a baby with a bonnet, a giant rattler, and a sash that says Baby New Year. And tell people the filthiest street jokes like that for a few bucks, dressed as a baby.
In Times Square, though, I think that would actually work.
Oh, I think it would. There's strippers there pumping Cheetah's strip club, and they're basically naked, just in body paint.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can do kind of whatever. So, and I might have a sign that says Dirty Jokes, $5. Which people think, well, this baby's going to tell us a dirty joke? Yeah, be Baby New Year telling the filthiest street jokes.
That would be real. Did you see Jimmy Fallon's Joking Bad at all?
I didn't,
I mean, it's just a spoof on Breaking Bad, but where they're okay. Selling jokes.
Instead of meth?
Yeah. So, and they're great. Even written on like the blue cards. and so they're going around New York and they're pawning off their jokes.
That's hilarious. Instead.
So I could almost see it like that, where yeah, you're selling your dirty jokes.
Yeah, and I almost think it's something that would catch.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, Baby New Year, it has a nice ring to it. A baby telling dirty street jokes. It's something like word of mouth. Have you heard about this filthy joke telling baby guy in Times Square? He has a rattler and a bonnet.
it would become the water cooler talk that, yeah, he's right down from Elmo. I saw him.
It would be like the Naked Cowboy.
Except the Naked Cowboy is just creepy. I think
yeah,
a baby.
Yeah, this would be funnier. Yeah. Oh, yeah. But yeah,
a baby telling dirty jokes would be absolutely hilarious.
No, the Naked Cowboy ran for mayor or something like that.
Really?
I think so. He ran for some kind of office. It might as well.
I mean, when you've got Anthony Weiner on the race and all that,
well, you got you may as well. You got Anthony Weiner and Elliot Spitzer.
Yeah.
The watching the race has been awesome. Shows that how for, you know, quickly we forget about news stories or how much we don't really care. And saw past it. A lot of people thought Weiner was the right guy for the job. They didn't care. The thing is, he did it again.
Yeah.
He didn't learn. He sort of said, yeah, these guys don't care. They like my ideas. And then started tweeting more pictures of his dong. It's like, no, Anthony, don't push your luck, man.
I think he should have just done everything as some type of dick pun. And that would have helped
that
him in the race.
Great. In all of his speeches. Like, we got to help the middle class.
So I'm going to give it to him up the
and
ass.
My waiter's in front of my ass.
And here's a picture.
Here's a picture. And then, then Spitzer, of course, the deviant...
the prostitute guy.
The deviant prostitute. Yeah, that was into this, like, filthy S&M bondage type stuff. That's the other guy. Now, I was watching a lot of the ads there. I get so frustrated with political ads sometimes because they're saying nothing. It's just the most meaningless, pandering bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, a guy comes on, doesn't matter if it's a Republican or Democrat, but basically saying, I'm going to do my best to make sure we have a crime-free streets. I'm opposed to racial profiling. We need good education. Like, that's verbatim almost what one ad was. I'm like, who's going to disagree with you, asshole? They pander to morons. They're like, yeah, well, that sounds great. I hate racism, too. We do need good education. I don't like crime. This is our guy.
One of the funniest I think I ever saw was about 2 years ago when I was in San Diego. And there was somebody that was running for California State Senate, I think. Uh-huh. And their last name was Poisoner.
that's great already.
Yeah, and I was just like, really? You didn't think twice about changing that?
Poisoner?
Before you ran for office. Because, I mean, that's what everybody wants, is a poisoner in Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's basically what lobbyists are. But
that is exactly what lobbyists are. That's hilarious, though. Poisoner.
Yeah, poisoner.
That is the worst name.
Yeah, it was the worst name. I mean, that's right up there with wiener or any of those others.
Oh, it's worse than wiener. Because wiener just sounds silly, and people will make wiener jokes. Like, poisoner, that's like the name for a tyrant. That's like a villain. That's a superhero villain.
Yeah, it should have been somebody Batman was going to do fighting next.
Poisoner. That's hilarious, man.
So, welcome to our podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me, man.
So, this is Tim Drake, your host, doing a solo interview with Andy Gold today. Comic from... Originally from Utah, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
now living in New York City, right. doing comedy out there and really touring all over doing comedy.
I go here and there. Places take me here and there. I wouldn't call what I'm doing touring, really. Nobody knows who I am or anything like that. But yeah, I'm going to LA here for the Ventura Comedy Festival next week. And then after that, we were talking about this before it started, I don't know if I'm going right back to New York or to Seattle, because I applied for the Seattle Comedy Competition. And if I get into that, that starts in November, I'm probably not going to go back to New York for 3 weeks just to come back and go to Seattle.
Right.
So I'll probably stay here. But yeah, if I don't get into Seattle, then I'm probably going right back to New York after Ventura, man. It's been exciting out there.
I bet.
It's been really exciting. They just gentrification has gone through much of the city. Where I live, downtown Brooklyn is very safe, so I'm not worried about. I don't feel in danger, but they haven't done anything about lunatics. Like, it's not illegal to be crazy. I was helping a buddy who was having problems with his car outside, and just a New York City crazy man. That's the only way I can describe him. Came up and he was like, well, what can I do to help? And I said, it's no big deal. We just got to jump it. Then he said, well, if we going to jump it, we going to need a bike and a ramp. Yeah, go get it, man.
Oh, you got to love some of those crazies. I remember up in Seattle at one point, Jordan and I had gone up to Seattle with a band that we were trying to get started at the time. We were trying to ride up there and just explore the city.
Uh-huh.
And we were walking quite a distance to get up to the Space Needle. And we went through just one real shady crack area.
Right.
And yeah, we had the crazies yelling everything at us. And we got offered to buy Coke at least 4 or 5 different times. And we were like, where are we?
Yeah.
So especially, you know, at the time we were both coming from Orem. Where, you know, everything had been repressed.
But you come from the land of chain stores, strip malls. Right.
And khaki pants.
Coming back to Utah. Actually, I don't bag on Utah too much. It's my home. My friends and family are here. I actually like Salt Lake quite a lot. But to be honest, there is this sort of soul-crushing aspect outside of Salt Lake to just the endless lack of character and personality. Just chain stores, strip malls, stucco buildings, beige. Just like blah to it. And you live in Orem?
Grew up South Jordan, now living in Saratoga Springs.
Okay. Well, nothing against Utah County, but it's the fucking worst.
Oh, it is. Definitely is.
I like the people. I like some of the people. But it just... as soon as you go past the point of the mountain, It's just this Pleasantville kind of vibe of...
I like thinking of it like Pleasantville. That's
yeah, there's just something soul-crushing about it, I guess.
Yeah, I've always teased Jordan because he's born and raised in Orem, and I don't see how. He's not like the rest of them.
Right. Well, I mean, there is a few that, stand out and do their own thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, other than that, though, I like Utah. I think Salt Lake's a cool spot. I think Salt Lake's pretty misunderstood. Really? Yeah, I try to tell people in New York what kind of town Salt Lake itself is. I go, like, Salt Lake's actually very gay-friendly.
Yeah.
You know? Not Utah. I'm talking just Salt
Lake.
Just
Salt Lake.
You know, it's progressive. There's some cool spots around it. Like, Salt Lake itself, I try to say, is actually very cool. And they don't want to believe it, because I think it's funner to believe
that it's just this Mormon town.
But. Right, because it's easier to make fun of, you know. So telling them how Salt Lake really is kind of turns everything on its head and makes it less easy to make fun of. And they don't really like that. They're comfortable.
Yeah, they're comfortable making us the butt of their jokes.
Exactly. And it does get annoying. Where are you from? I say I'm from Utah. You know, and it's just like, well, it's cold. Your magic underwear is not going to keep you warm, I bet. I'm like, I just wear boxers. They're like, oh, yeah, I bet you had a lot of moms to buy you all the boxers you wanted. It's like, okay, all right, fine. So often.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. We're very openly stereotyped. Very much.
I think one of the funniest that I encountered was we were actually taking a limo to the airport in L.A., and the driver starts talking to us about where we were flying out to. And we're like, oh, we're just flying back to Salt Lake City for the weekend. And he's like, oh, well, what's it like out there? And we're like, a lot of mountains. And he's like, there's mountains out there? He's like, where the hell do you think Salt Lake City is? Like, everything we started telling him about Utah, more or less just right. Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
He had no idea. I think he thought we were in, like, Nebraska or something.
Yeah, they don't know anything. He didn't even know we had mountains.
Yeah.
We have, like, some of the best mountains. That's, like, our slogan, best snow on earth. Right. We're, like, the mecca for skiing up in Park City. But I don't know. Some folks, yeah. Well, and they think it's just, like, sister wives, prairie dresses, stuff like that, Big Love.
Yeah, between Big Love and sister wives. It's
yeah. How many polygamists do you grow up? I'm like, no, I had one mom and one dad. I've never actually met a polygamist. Oh, they're so disappointed when I tell them that. I go, I don't know any polygamists. I'm not sure I've seen any.
I remember one of my first encounters throughout high school. We were doing a service project up behind Lakai, where there's some of those old plantation, like the polygamous plantations that have been taken over by the state.
Yes.
And so we were doing a project in one, and there was still an active one right next door. Ooh. We were out back just exploring, and then all of a sudden at the gate that connected, and we're just two little kids just staring at us. And it was like straight out of Children of the Corn.
All of
us shit ourselves and ran back inside.
I would love to go exploring there, man.
Oh, it was one of the creepiest places I have ever. I mean, the walls would actually open in parts so that like they could hide the kids if the state tried to come through.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I know I know they're still there because I watch the news and everything like that. But, yeah, when I try to tell folks, no, I don't. It's not something I see on a reg. The funny thing is they're kind of disappointed. They thought I would have, like, these great scores. Like, yeah, I escaped through the gauntlet of my 100 moms, fighting them off with a pitchfork, then hopped the fence back into civilization and learned how to read and
suddenly you became
myself.
In color as you hopped the fence.
Right. I know. It was black and white that I hopped the fence. It was in color. I threw off my straw hat and overalls.
Now, see, there's a new movie. Forget Pleasantville. You can start a new movie about escaping polygamy.
Oh, dude. Oh, wow. And you know what? You could sell it to people, too.
Yeah.
You could make it very Schindler's List-esque. Okay. Have the plant be just, like, very black and white concentration camp. From what I've seen, it would suck to grow up.
Yeah.
Polygamist. I mean, wouldn't it? Is there any aspect that looks appealing?
The part down the middle. I mean, they get that part so perfect. I mean, it's like a Wall Street haircut.
Oh, I know.
I mean, that other than that perk, I don't see any.
It would other than
I
that
don't
perk,
look good in denim. I'm too fat for it.
Yeah, it would especially suck for the 14-year-old girls having to hook up with the 60-year-old dude. Yeah. That would be a... I wonder what must be going through their mind. Like, oh, geez.
I've always wondered if as babies, if they brand them. if they're just like, she's with him, that's...
Who was the guy that was in the news a few years ago? He was like the big king of the polygamists.
No, Warren Jeffs.
Yes, that fuck.
And I hate that I know that name off the top of my head.
Warren Jeffs. Didn't he just look just like a dude that was just constantly fighting off his hard-on when kids were walking by?
I always, every time they showed him like the courtroom walking, I just kept waiting for him to morph into C-3PO the way that he always walked.
Morph into C- So are you a pretty big nerd, dude?
To a degree. I mean, not quite like the geek show guys.
Right.
So, but to a degree.
To a degree. You make a few geek culture references here. Yeah, and there and yeah. Stuff
I can carry a conversation with the geeks, but then when they really get into it, when they get into the Doctor Who and all of that, yeah. I'm like, hey, TARDIS was just a name my dad called me when I was younger. I didn't realize it was something they were traveling in.
That turned out to be such a fun show, man. That crowd was amazing. I was a little concerned because I don't have any material that like bashes the nerds or anything, but I don't have any nerd material at all. And I don't know anything about it. And as I've seen Star Wars and everything because everybody has.
Yeah.
But I was sitting there at the table just watching everybody come into the showroom, and it was just like 40-year-old dude after 40-year-old dude after 40-year-old dude all wearing comic book shirts. And I'm like, this is going to be the most depressing bunch of fucks ever. But they turned out to be amazing. That was such an insane crowd.
It was definitely a good show. And for those that don't know what we're talking about, just over weekend, there was a benefit show for one of the members of Geek Show Podcast that Andy performed at with a ton of other comics.
Yeah, there's a million comics.
Yeah, I didn't realize there was even going to be that many comics. I thought it was just going to be a handful, and I knew Carrie was kind of hosting. I had no idea really what it was, because I bought the tickets while I was still living in L.A.,
Oh, okay.
So I was just like, I'd heard what was going on with Shannon, and I was like, I got to be there.
Yeah, I heard crazy. About that. I never met him before, but that's just terrible.
Yeah, Shannon's one of the few that I hadn't met before. I mean, we've had about half the Geek Show panel on the show.
Oh, have you?
And so, Shannon's one of the few that I haven't ever met, but yeah, to kind of follow everything, it was depressing.
Oh, man. I losing a family member is devastating.
Yeah, let alone three in 6 months, was it? Yes. 7 months?
Yes. That would affect your ability to function in public, I think.
Yeah.
That would be tough. No, so I mean, you know, good on Jay Whitaker for putting it on and making some money for him and helping him out. You know, glad it was something we could do. Felt nice. It was a great show, too, man. And they had that raffle, so I think it did some good.
Yeah, the raffle was really cool. I didn't win, but
no,
I saw some of those prizes and I was like, man, I was just doing this just to do it, but I really want some of those things.
The first guest set I ever did in comedy, set other than an open mic, was for a charity show like that, and I bought a raffle ticket, just one, and I won the grand prize, which was Bon Jovi tickets, and the audience thought it was rigged because I was a comic. So I was walking up on stage to get it, and everybody was booing me, and I flipped them off and grabbed my nuts on stage and flipped everybody off. I'm like, yeah! And I was like, I'm not even a very big Bon Jovi fan either.
So you said that was even before you did, like, open mic earlier or anything?
No, this is the first set I did other than open mic, yes.
Okay.
First
and how long ago was that? Like, when was it that you really started? Into, I think the first time I saw you was a little over a year ago with Chris Kattan.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so. I remember that night. Let's see. So the first set I ever did was in May of 2010. So just a little over 3 years, which in the comedy world is actually still very new.
Yeah.
They say it takes about 10 years to really hit your stride in stand-up. Sometimes it's discouraging, thinking, wow, I got to put that much work in.
Yeah.
But I started 3 years ago into my first open mic, and I never took a break or got discouraged, and I haven't missed a week doing comedy since. I went to open mic every Wednesday from May of 2010 up until October of 2010 when I first started to get guest sets. and I wasn't very good when I first started. I tried to tell stories, kind of like Bill Cosby. And I couldn't do it at all. I just couldn't find the funny in it. They were very incoherent. People didn't know what I was talking about. And then something clicked, and I realized I just didn't have jokes. You know, and I started writing jokes, and as it turned out, I actually could do it. Like, found that jokes were my strength, and just started telling kind of jokes on stage, and actually jokes about me, rather than observational stories, right. Jokes about my own life. And something just clicked, man, and that's what worked, and started hitting it, and started getting guest sets in October of 2010. And a few months later is when I started getting just tons of time and really just fell in love with it and said, I think this is what I want to do.
Who was the first comic that you had a guest set with?
It was Guy Seidel.
Okay.
He was the first guy I opened for, a local guy. When you first start doing guest sets, opening for people, Keith Stubbs, he's not going to have you open for Bill Burr
right. Your
first time. He's going to have you open for a local guy your first time. And in my case, it was Guy Seidel, who hosted my very second open mic and saw me bomb. Right. But it was for this charity show that he does every year to help kids or something like that. I don't know what it is.
But no, I'm not familiar with which show that is.
He does it every year for Christmas. It's basically to help needy kids, you know. This one was right around Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So this is the first guest that I ever did was with Guy Seidel, though. Yeah.
And Guy, I've only got to see Guy a handful of times. I've always loved his comedy, though.
Oh, he's hilarious.
So, yeah, I mean, I was thrilled to see that he was on the Geek Show benefit as well. So, yeah. I mean, it was everybody big in Utah.
everybody. I mean, geez, how many comics were on it? 15 or something?
At least 15.
Yeah, it was crazy. That was a long show.
So, now what made you decide you wanted to start comedy?
You know, it's funny. I was never a big fan of stand-up comedy. I didn't dislike it. I watch a lot more now that I'm doing it. But I was always, like, the funny guy my whole life. In school, I was always the funny person. I'm kind of the class clown. It was more about rebelling against the teacher than it was. More than anything, that's where I really got off. But, I didn't have any, you know, to give you the short story of it, I just got out of rehab, okay, and was very, very depressed. I didn't have any trade skills, no education, pretty lengthy criminal record, and I just said, what the hell, I think I'm gonna try this stand-up comedy thing. I had never been to a stand-up comedy show. I didn't know anything about the fundamentals of stand-up comedy or how to construct a joke or anything like that. I just thought, I'm a funny person, and this is the only way. This is like the only thing I know that I'm good at. This is the only way I know to get paid being funny. So
right.
I went to open mic Wednesday in May of 2010, man, and gave it a shot and had a pretty decent set my first time, actually. It was the next few after that were really painful.
Yeah, and that's what I've always...
Yeah,
I've always heard is that that first set's always you almost always kill, and then it's
the following ones. Really?
Yeah, I think even in Jen Kirkman's recent book, like she mentions, my first one, you know, I did excellent with, and then bombed for like the next five or six, and so it's like every time I've done open mic, they're always so spread apart that I always do well, and I'm like, I need to do a back to back so I can have that bomb.
How often have you gone on stage now?
I mean, probably overall five times.
Oh, wow.
So, still super fresh out. I hadn't even decided to actually do stand-up until my agent at one point was like, you need to do stand-up. And I was like, really? I don't know why, but I mean, if you insist.
Yeah, man, every Wednesday it's there.
Yeah, Keith is actually, when we did the interview with Keith, when we set it up, he was just kind of like, so, and, you know, why don't you guys be on the show too? And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, it was that was the first open mic I had done in probably a year.
Oh, wow.
Year, almost 2 years. And it was just kind of, I remember telling Jordan the night before, I was like, dude, I don't know if my stuff's good enough. Because a lot of mine is just, it's just stories. And he was like, you know those stories and they're hilarious. Like, just do them.
Well, and so much writing actually comes on stage.
Yeah.
Working it out on stage. And you think of stuff based on the audience's reaction.
Right.
Stage time is vital, vital, vital. Even more important than talent, even. So that's why I was talking about the whole experience thing. They say 10 years. I think it depends on stage time, though. Sometimes it annoys me when comics who have been doing comedy longer than I have in terms of years try to say they have experience. Because I'm like, yeah, but you do one set every 2 weeks.
Right.
I do 10 sets a week. Okay? Like, pilots, they don't say how many years have you been doing it. They say how many hours do you have. I think it should be the same with comedy.
That's a good point.
Not how many years have you been doing comedy, how many times you get on stage. That's experience. Stage time, not years.
Yeah.
Because I know guys that have been doing it years and years, but they have 10% the stage time that I have.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, and then you get the guys that are like, you know, Mark Maron and Louis C.K. that
right.
have actually been doing it like 30 years, and it's only been the last five that
yes.
for them it's
they really have picked up. Such a good sense of what they do.
Yeah.
People are like, oh, Louis writes a new hour every year. He's amazing. First of all, even people that have been doing it that long, very few can.
Right.
All right, Louis has that talent and that gift. Secondly, Louis has such a good sense of what he does. He knows who he is, how he's going to go about it, how he's going to approach each bit. He knows himself so well on stage, and that's why he's able to crank out
a full hour.
A full hour every single year. You know, most guys can't. Even Chris Rock, he's about an hour every 3 years.
Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld, even less. Seems like Gaffigan's been about an hour every 2.5, 3 years. Brian Regan cranks out a lot of material.
Yeah.
Bill Burr seems to be a guy that comes out with a new hour every 2.5, 3 years, something like that. And those are guys that write a lot and write fast and are prolific. Louis C.K. is just a freak.
Yeah.
He's just a freak.
Well, I mean, he's nominated, as I was looking at the Emmys coming up this week.
Yeah.
I mean, an Emmy for his comedy special.
Yeah.
Plus his writing on his show.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's just...
And he does the show, too.
Yeah, and that's just mind-blowing to me to be that have that strong of comedy writing skills that he's looking at it in two aspects.
Two different styles of writing.
Yeah.
Stand-up and TV writing.
And dominating.
Yes, and dominating. And they're both hilarious. Yeah. Carlin is... I mean, we'll see how long Louis C.K. lives, but Carlin had 14 HBO specials, not counting his CDs and stuff. So he's probably the most prolific stand-up ever. Put it in perspective, like Seinfeld has had 2
right.
HBO specials. Carlin had 14. So as far as amount of material, I think George Carlin and Bill Cosby are the two guys that have put out the most. But not everybody can do that, even when they reach their peak. Not everybody has that ability.
Have you had a chance to ever see Cosby? Or I mean, what year was it when Carlin passed?
Carlin passed in 2008, yes. I did see Cosby 3 years ago at Kingsbury Hall. It was funny. He just takes a seat and tells stories, and it was all just kind of about him being old. You know, he actually has a new special coming out on November on Comedy Central.
Oh, really?
It's his first one in 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so... I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I was kind of surprised to hear it was Comedy Central and not HBO, though.
Yeah, I mean, with HBO, I mean, the last one I really can think of was Louis' last.
Oh, my God. It's just, I think more people might see it on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
But HBO kind of, it still has that mystique.
Right.
You know, and you think like the great comics and the great specials, HBO still kind of has that allure. And... I guess the other thing is, if I'm going to watch a Cosby special, I kind of want to get some popcorn, sit down,
yeah.
And I don't want commercials.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because that's like an event kind of a special.
Yeah, not
nothing against.
This is the Comedy Central sponsor.
Right. Nothing against Comedy Central.
Yeah.
I mean, they're awesome. But it's just like, oh, wow, Cosby, I thought he would do an HBO sort of this exclusive kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But,
and I've heard a lot of comics talk, too, with, like, Comedy Central or some of those where, yeah, they have those commercial breaks.
Yeah.
That it's frustrating as they do their set because the executives at Comedy Central and some of them will edit it in ways that they don't want their show to go. And so I've heard some of them, I think it was Zach Galifianakis, they, like, took off a piece of clothing and just kept referring to the clothing, so they had to edit it the way that...
And he took off the clothing in order.
Yeah.
So they had to edit it in order. First his scarf... Then his sweater. Okay, then he removed something else. I can't remember, but did it in order where if they turn around and edit it and put this here and that here,
wouldn't make sense.
Would look weird. And it depends on the style of comic, too. Like Mitch Hedberg, they edited his and put it all around and here and there. And it didn't matter as much with him because he tells one-liners that have no segues.
And sometimes he has that dead air afterwards, too, where everybody, including him, is going, wait, what did he just say?
Right. So he'll tell a joke about Pringles and then a joke about ducks. You know, there's no transition into subjects. So that kind of style affords the editors a little more freedom to kind of mess with it. But if you have an anecdotal style, then I can see why the comics wouldn't want it to be messed with too much. Especially if you have like a 7-minute bit and it builds, you know, as it grows. To have that chopped up and messed with and everything like that could really ruin the whole thing.
Yeah, and I've seen, it's like I'll go back there and watch some of the old Comedy Central specials. I've noticed that, particularly with like Amy Schumer. A lot of hers really will build up, and all of a sudden there's a commercial break, and it comes back, and I'm like, what the hell is she talking about? Like,
right. Yeah, I think she's funny.
Yeah, and her show is absolutely hilarious.
Man, I haven't gotten a chance to watch it.
I haven't watched a ton of it, but everything I've seen of it has just been hilarious.
She has one of my very favorite jokes. This isn't a street joke, I'm sorry. She opened her hour special with it. She's like, I am in a great mood. I finally had sex with my high school crush. Everybody cheers. And she said, and now he's just acting all weird and just expects me to go to his graduation. She goes, like, I know where I'm going to be in 3 years. I think Amy Schumer's hilarious, man.
Yeah,
she's so funny.
She is fantastic. She's one that I would hope that Keith can somehow bring out here.
Yeah, she's starting to get big.
Yeah,
though,
so
man.
I'm going to maybe have to be like a Maverick Center or something like that.
Or like Kingsbury Hall, maybe.
Yeah.
Not necessarily Maverick Center, but friggin' some of these comics are just like Brian Regan's doing ESA for hell's sakes, man.
And he does those major venues out here 4 nights in a row.
I know. And I was talking to my mom, you know, and she was watching something on the news about him. She was saying he sounds interesting because he's clean and everything. And she asked me, do you like him? And I say I love him, but it's because he's funny, not because he's clean. Yes, he's clean, but that's not the reason I like him.
Yeah.
I like Brian Regan, Jim Gaffigan, because they're funny, because they make me laugh. Not because I'm like, oh, they're all so clean. I just like funny comics, man. You know? Same reason I like Louis C.K. and Chris Rock. It's not because they're edgy or raunchy. It's because they're funny. I just like funny comics. And Brian Regan, he's not doing clean just to pander to people who like clean, you know, like some guys do a little bit. I'm not going to say anybody, but Brian Regan actually used to work dirty and it just didn't work for him. And he started working clean because he found out that was the funnier version of himself. He didn't start working clean because he's like, I want to work clean so I can play in front of families and this and that. He just found out he was funnier clean. That's what worked for him. And that's why he went clean.
Yeah, you know, like, and like I never knew that about it. I just remember walking past Deseret Book and seeing his DVD.
Yeah, right. Like a comic's like, it should be, it isn't always, but their primary motivator to how they're going to be on stage should be the funniest version of themselves.
Right.
Sometimes it's edgy, sometimes it's blue, sometimes it's dark, sometimes it's clean, goofy, observational, whatever. And he just found out the clean goofball stuff was the funniest version of himself. And it is hilarious. Do you like Brian Regan?
I haven't watched enough to really like him or dislike him. I was always rubbed a little bit of the wrong way when I saw him in Deseret Book. I was I can't latch on to that.
I hear you, dude. No, I totally get that. If that was my first impression of him.
Yes, especially when I was living in Orem at the time, and I had people that were shocked that I liked Conan O'Brien and have I listened to Brian Regan. And I was like, really? You're bagging Conan O'Brien and telling me I should be listening to Brian Regan instead?
Why didn't they like Conan?
They would never give me a reason. They would always just say, well, nobody does. I'm like, all right, nobody likes Conan O'Brien.
That's not true at all.
Yeah.
A lot of people love Conan.
Yeah, I think he has the third highest late night show. So,
he's my favorite late night guy.
Yeah, he's my absolute favorite. I mean,
hilarious.
We've been to his show multiple times.
Oh, have you?
He has the best opener in the business.
Jimmy Pardo is hilarious, man.
Yeah, the guy, I mean, I've seen Pardo probably close to 10 times now, and it never gets old.
Well,
he's coming back in 3 weeks, and I'm already excited.
No two shows are the same.
No.
Nobody riffs and does crowd work like Pardo. There's another guy coming named Cash Levy, who's very, very funny with that
spontaneity. And I've never had a chance to even hear him, and he's one that I'm planning to get to.
You should go see Cash. I know him pretty well. He's very, very great with that, too. You're right, though, Pardo, man. Oh, my God. He had me almost in tears last time he was in town. Just this, what? Okay, huh? Super, super intense. When he was doing panel on Conan. Conan's like, yeah, so I mean, you know, we're big fans. He's like, yeah, I know. Uh-huh. Podcast listeners can't get what I'm talking about because they're not seeing my body language, but he leans in.
Yeah, he leans in and his face is always tight. And
always tight, very intense. Uh-huh. He's great.
I mean, and I've been lucky to go to a lot of the different late night shows. And so I say, yeah, he's the best in the business. Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that he's. I mean, I don't even know what the guy's name was that opens for Leno because he didn't tell us his name.
Oh.
And, I mean, he was good. But, uh-huh. And then the guy that opens for Kimmel, Don Barris, I think is his name.
Don't know him.
So I know Maron just did an episode with him that I'm looking forward to listening to because I want to know, you know, how he got where he was because it got to the point that we were almost just annoyed.
Oh, wow. Really?
Where it was just like, all right, let's bring Jimmy out now. Like, enough.
Whereas with Pardo, when
it's
he's
like,
done,
oh,
you're like,
really?
Oh, no, come on.
Yeah, and that's I think what, too, gets the crowd at Conan always going so much is that Pardo's energy really does get that crowd energy
and from
going.
From what I understand, it's one of the crowds that isn't juiced with signs that say applaud, laugh, stuff like that.
It is for the moment that Conan walks out.
Okay.
And that's it.
But it isn't for the comics.
Nope.
I was talking to Bent last night, Bent Washburn, who just did Conan. And we were talking about that a little bit, about how it's the one crowd that isn't juiced for comics. All the laughs have to be real and everything. So a lot goes into how well you do, okay? Who they're interviewing, stuff like that. Bent actually had a very good set, did fine. He interviewed Chelsea Handler. But you could get a pretty tough card if they interview a celebrity who's pumping, say for example, he has George Clooney on that's pumping, creating awareness for Darfur.
Right.
And they talk about that for 15 minutes, and that's now the mood the audience is in. And then a comic has to come up and do a 5-minute set and make them laugh. That'd be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know I talked to Spencer King kind of about the booking procedure because I know he's been sending a lot of tapes out and stuff.
Right.
And he had talked to the people at Conan, where Spencer's absolutely hilarious.
Uh-huh.
So, and they were like, you know, it's good, but, you know, change this. Work on. And so it's like, I mean, the people over at Conan, too, they're comedy wizards.
Yeah.
So, I mean, especially where you look at, you know, where Conan's brought, you know, Dion Cole, who was one of his top writers, his own show.
Right.
And now, you know, he's producing Pete Holmes' show.
Yes.
That'll be starting this fall. And it's just, I mean, Conan just gets comedy.
Yes, he does. Well, he used to write for SNL.
Yeah, SNL, The Simpsons.
Yeah, he knows comedy. You're absolutely right.
Even the way his stage is set up, he did for comedic purposes, which, I mean, it's a very technical thing that most people never in a million years would even realize that, you know, it's a game that's making them laugh more. Mm. Where he made his stage extra small and close up so that it would be more intimate.
Yeah.
So that those goofy looks that he gives, everybody could see that.
Yeah.
That goofy look, and he wanted it to be more intimate so that the comedy would be
better,
would be stronger.
It's a good idea. Not only do they have suggestions on what words will make it funnier and everything like that, they're also very guarded on what kind of trouble they can get in with what the comic is going to say. Not so much on Conan because it's cable, but Leno and Letterman and things like
that.
There's a comic years ago, Orny Adams. He's in that documentary, Comedian. And he had a joke where he used the word lupus, which it's not edgy, it's not profane, it's not dirty, but they made him change it the very last minute just because it might turn off people with lupus. It might create some, they might get some angry letters, people writing to their sponsors saying this is an insensitive show, they're making fun of lupus. So they're just so careful and so kind of paranoid about any potentially offensive thing.
Right.
Sometimes comics get their stuff switched up a little bit. I was watching Bill Burr on Letterman, who I love. And it was kind of a watered-down version of himself when he was on Letterman.
Just because he had to abide by the guidelines.
He had to stay planted, okay? They even have specific guidelines, you know, like body language, stuff like that, the order of it, the aggressiveness of his delivery. It was funny. It was good, but it was all of the little idiosyncrasies that make Bill Burr were gone. And it just seemed like this kind of watered down version of Bill Burr.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So that's not always my favorite spot to watch a comic, is on those late night shows. Because I always feel like this isn't really them. This right. is the Lettermanized version of them. This is the safe as hell, middle of the road version of who they are.
Yeah, and it's funny too when you do see, you know, that watered down version of them, and then you go into a comedy club and see them.
Right.
And like, I mean, one of the examples I've used a few times on here is when we saw Drew Carey, and half of the audience there was, you know, it looked like they had just stepped out of a mom and pop store, and
right.
And they had no idea what they were in for. And, and Drew started off his set, you know, I think aside from the fact that, you know, people think of him from, you know, The Price is Right now.
Right.
But he also realized he was in Utah.
Yes.
And so one of the first things he says is, if you're expecting Price is Right humor right now, you're at the wrong show.
Yeah. And Drew Carey was, I saw a little bit of it. I saw his show. He did a lot of sketches and stuff. And unfortunately, I didn't see a lot of his stand-up. But I know back in the day, when he was just a stand-up, he was one of the greats.
Yeah.
He killed on Johnny Carson. That was like his big break. Got invited over to the couch his first time and everything like that. So how was his stand-up? Did you see much of it?
It was good. I mean, I like what you're talking about with his older stuff. I mean, I've watched some of his older stuff, and yeah, it was absolutely hilarious. Uh-huh. I mean, one of my friends and I always have the continual joke whenever something shitty happens of, from what Drew Carey would say, right. Well, at least it's not snowing outside.
Oh, yep. I remember that bit. Right.
And
yeah.
So we've joked with that for, I mean, 5-6 years now.
Yeah.
From when we first saw that. And yeah, I mean, it's not where it used to be, but uh-huh. I mean, it was still funny.
I can see why it wouldn't be where it used to be. I worry about that if I ever hit it one day.
So some of the jokes are almost too predictable. Like
right.
Even with the sketch, I mean, right when they came out with the sketch, I mean, he sits down, and of course they bring up his weight loss right away.
Yes.
And I was like, all right, here comes the meth joke in 5, 4, 3, and sure enough, boom, there's the meth joke.
Yeah. It just, I think it would be hard to stay motivated once you're a gazillionaire.
Yeah.
There's a story of Eddie Murphy, who was like, I kind of want to try stand-up again, you know? Who you remember in the 80s was the king of stand-up. Yeah. He was a monster. So here he is. He has a net worth of $100 million or something. Just insane. He lives up in a castle in Beverly Hills. And he's sitting in front of his 100-inch TV with a beautiful supermodel, I'm sure. And he's like, you know what? I want to go try stand-up again. And the story is, you know, he goes down to the comedy store. And he's sitting in the back thinking about doing a set. And he watches a comic go up in front of a half-empty room, many of whom are just drunk. This comic just eats shit for 10 minutes, just working out stuff. It's rough, it's hard, it's vicious. And Eddie Murphy just says, fuck this, leaves the club and goes back to he's like, what? Why do I want to do that again? I don't need that.
Right. And the comedy store definitely is rough.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, the first time that Jordan and I, about a year ago, I took Jordan down to Hollywood for the first time so that he could kind of experience things and see more of the industry. And yeah, we went to the comedy store, and I mean, it's intimidating just going in to be in the audience.
Yeah.
So I mean, when you start kind of becoming a comedy geek and you see those names on the wall as you walk in,
right,
and then just to sit there and realize, you know, everything that came from that room. And I mean, it's LA, and I mean the same in New York, I'm sure, where yeah. those crowds are 10 times tougher. They're yes. they're expecting the best.
They've seen
because the best have
they've
grown
seen
up
tons
there.
Of comedy.
Yeah.
All right, you have to experience the joke with them. It can't just seem like this written, regurgitated thing. It has to be a joke that you're feeling. You have to believe it so they can believe it. And they're intelligently quiet, and they are harder to please. The positive is, if you do please them, they let you know.
Right.
At least in New York, and well, and in L.A. too. They let you know. So you know if you're doing well, but absolutely they're harder to please. I mean, they see comedy all the time. They are comedy savvy people.
Right.
You know? Have you ever, whenever you're in the LA area, I suggest going to the Ice House.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot about the Ice House, and I've never had a chance to check it out.
I'm doing a set there next week. I did a set there a few months ago. I'm doing a set there the next week. It's comedy heaven. It's one place where they always fill it. They go to have fun, and you have such a good time. If you're ever in L.A., go see a comedy show at the Ice House. You'll have a blast, I promise.
Yeah, I'll be back there next month, so I'm definitely.
And it'll appeal to the comedy geek in you because it's an L.A. club that's been around for 30 years. They got the names on the wall, the pictures on the wall. You'll see the young Jay Lenos and the young Steve Martins and everybody that started out there and everything like that. But it just has a very fun kind of vibe. It doesn't have the dismal intimidation of the Comedy Store. Very inviting kind of fun vibe. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. That and then the Laugh Factory has always been one that.
Oh, of course.
The good people at the Laugh Factory have always been friendly on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, but they've retweeted, you know, some of the pictures and stuff we have from the Laugh Factory, but
right.
Yeah, never, you know, going in there. It's somewhere I want to try to do their open mic set, but you almost have to do it a week in advance.
The open mic at the Laugh Factory is once a month. Okay, to sign up, you have to get there early, and there's no chance that you'll get on. So sometimes it is a week in advance, and it has to be G-rated.
Oh, and I didn't know that part of it.
They want to see if you can write a joke. They just want to see if you know how to write a joke, without anything else attached to it, without creating any tension, without creating any groans or any shock factor at all. They just want to see, can you write a joke?
They just want pure comedy.
That's just what they want to see. If you can do that and you demonstrate that for a few years, and then you can work dark and blue and everything like that. I have an audition at the comic strip in New York here in a couple of months. And they say, we want to see it clean. All right? Because they just want to... They want to see what you can do, as you said, just comedically. Okay, we just want to see what you're capable of, how you can construct a joke. We want to see the funny you're capable of without any other connotations attached to it, and then we'll know if you got something. And that's how a lot of clubs kind of work. Wise guys, they don't really enforce any censorship at all. And I wouldn't even say censorship, because that's not what it is. The motivation isn't to censor you. It's to see what you have.
Right.
When I first started, I remember the MC would tell people, and maybe he still does, I don't know, like, no dick, no anal, like, stuff like that. And some people took it as, oh, fucking Utah. No, it's not a Utah thing. That's a comedy club thing. That's not uncommon, but they do a lot because they just want to see what kind of comedic potential you have. So it's not an uncommon thing. It's not just a Utah thing.
Right.
So if people do go to open mic, if any of your listeners are thinking about it, and the MC, it's usually Scott, says, don't do this, don't do that, it's not because it's Mormon country and it's a Utah thing, you know?
So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't, I don't recall them telling us that when we did ours. So
I don't
hopefully
think they do it anymore.
Hopefully they didn't, because I closed mine with a blowjob joke, so.
And they're pretty free around here. I mean, I'm not a G-rated comic by any means. I can work clean if I have to, but I actually like creating tension. I like going darker, stuff like that. But they're pretty cool here in Utah. And I think one of the reasons they are is because they're worried if they're not at Wise Guys, people are going to blow the whistle and say, it's Utah, Mormon
right.
country. So they actually have to be more liberal than the big markets.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember who it was now that when Marin was out here back in August.
Uh-huh.
I think it was Rob Schneider, actually, that tweeted about Marin performing at Wise Guys about how, yeah, it's one of the greatest clubs in the nation.
Yes.
And it really is. I mean, after seeing a lot of the different comedy clubs in L.A., I mean, the closest one to me was Flappers in Burbank.
Uh-huh.
And I walked through and looked at their lineup, and I was like, you look at this lineup and you look at who Wise Guys has coming through, and it was just like night and day.
Wise Guys, in particular Wise Guys West Valley City, is on the short list of the best clubs in the country, and that's no shit. People don't appreciate it, because as I was saying, people just want to believe that Utah's lame. People are comfortable believing that sometimes, when in fact, a lot of things about it are not lame, and Wise Guys is a premier A club that the top club comics in the country want to work at.
Yeah, and Keith gets that.
And Keith gets that, and he brings him in, puts on awesome shows. He knows how to do it. He knows how to put on a comedy show. He's been in the business. He is a comedian.
Yeah.
All right. And the crowds are amazing. The other thing, I love talking to comics who are working wise guys for the first time, nervous about their material, and I'm like, they came to see you. All right. Do your thing. And they're done. They're like, oh my God, that was amazing. When I worked with Aisha Tyler before I left, her opener was a little nervous because he's just like very flamboyantly gay. And that's what his act is. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, it's Utah. And he obliterated the place. And then he's like, oh my God, that was amazing.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't realize with Utah, especially the people that are going to have a problem with that aren't going to be in a comedy club.
That's very true.
Yeah, they're yes. going to be home with their families playing corn bag toss or whatever that thing's called.
Uh-huh.
And that's corn their Friday night.
Yeah, that's a good point, man. That's true. The people that don't want that aren't going. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you always see the millions of annoying Facebook memes that, you know, if you don't like it, then don't. But as annoying as they are, they're true.
They are true.
They're completely true. If you don't like gay marriage, don't get gay married. Like, deal with it.
Right. Just don't get gay married. Yeah. Right. Ugh. I know. It blows me away.
Yeah. It makes me laugh. And then at the same time, it's like, I'll see like the trail of comments. And every time I'm like, don't click on the comments. It's just going to make you mad.
Always don't. A mistake.
Yeah. And always, I always do.
I know. I do the same thing. What's the hell, man? Such idiots. Aren't we?
I think it's because we know that it's going to somehow jar something in our minds. It's going to be like, I can pull from this somewhere. It's like digital people watching almost.
Yes. Yeah. Very true.
Yeah, that's probably why I do it. It's just so I can make fun of people more.
I picture it sometimes with Facebook comments. I'll picture this person in my mind and I will pick their whole fucking life apart. Like what they look like, where they live, what their day-to-day life is like. I mean, you worthless, depressed mom that just walks around in your sweatpants looking out at your blinds for hooligans with curlers in your hair, phone calling your neighbors, gossipy, worthless, just based on like, I don't agree with this.
Yeah.
That's what I'll deduce from that person.
So I always love the one that it's like, they read the first part of it.
Right.
And they didn't bother to read the rest and they just want to be angry. I mean, it could be something that said like, Obama loves puppies.
Right.
And you would get at least 50 comments in a row, oh, fuck Obama, impeach Obama. And it's like, well, he loves puppies.
He loves
like,
puppies. Right.
But all they saw was Obama, and so there comes the tirade.
I know. Guys, an A rep. I saw one that was the best. There was a photograph of him putting his foot on the table of the Oval Office.
Yeah.
Oh, you saw that?
Yeah.
And like, there's photographs of actually lots of presidents doing it.
Yeah,
relaxing.
I saw John Stewart go through a bunch of them.
Yeah, I didn't even realize it was taboo. And then one lady, oh, I wish I could remember her name.
I know you're talking about she's like a conservative talk show.
And I think I saw this on The Daily Show, yes. What she said was it was hilarious. Yeah. And how insane it was. Hilarious. She was saying, this is a subliminal message to Muslim extremists because they know that the sole of the foot is the most insulting. Like, it's the most insulting thing a human
can
do.
Shown.
That you can be shown. And he is showing them that he is putting the bottom of his foot on the desk of the Oval Office, communicating to him his disdain for American values. Like, no, he was just...
He was kicking back.
Yeah. I'm all for criticizing whoever our president is, Republican or Democrat, if they've screwed up.
Yeah.
By all means. Please, let's do it. Let's have a discussion. But let's not be psychopaths and say he's sending subliminal messages to terrorists by putting his feet on the table.
Yeah, that's...
It's insane.
Yeah, I mean, aside from that
one,
too.
And she has a public
too.
Voice.
Yeah. And the people somehow actually find coherent and follow.
Yeah, she has followers. She has people that hear... This is the fucking thing that's less funny and more alarming. People hear that and go, yeah, I think
she's
so.
Making a point.
No. When you hear something like that, you're supposed to be like, wow, look at this maniac.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, for all of us, it's comedy gold. I mean, when they announced that Elizabeth Hasselbeck was joining Fox and Friends,
right.
I fell to the floor and thanked the comedy gods for that one.
Right.
I mean, that was the greatest gift any of us could have been given, short of Mitt Romney winning the presidency.
I know, really. Oh, man. But no, you're right. It's great for comedy, but at the same time, you're like, this woman actually has a lot of people
that are
take her seriously.
And believe.
And like, did you actually listen to what she just said now? She said that he's sending subliminal messages to terrorists, that he has disdain for American values by putting his foot on the table.
It's a good thing he didn't, like, tap his foot or something, or then he would have been sending, like, Morse code. Or
yeah, who knows what they would have gotten from that.
So, I mean, even within the same week, you had Miss America win, you know, being
what,
the first
Indian. And
she's
from India or something?
Well, she's from New York. She's born and raised in here, but she's of Indian descent.
Right.
And the first thing that people start saying, oh, you let the terrorists win. It's like, first off,
right,
she's from India, not Afghanistan or one of those other countries. So,
well,
wrong there.
And listen, man, what's more stupidly American than wanting to be a pageant girl?
Yeah. Well, I love
that sold me on. She's total Americana. Yeah. If she finds pageant life appealing.
I think it was Colbert that showed her in during the swimsuit competition. It's like, because you know, as all terrorist women, they look best in a two-piece. and it was so golden. I mean, I just lost it. Even Colbert broke.
Right. That's hilarious.
I mean, it was one of the best bits I'd heard in a while.
Oh, man. That's hilarious.
So as we kind of wrap things up here, Andy, okay, you've got two shows this weekend.
Two on Friday, one on Saturday at Wise Guys West Valley. Cut it down to one show on Saturday because I am competing with the BYU Utah game,
which is
a nightmare. Yeah, man, it's going to be tough.
And you'd have to pull Keith away from that, you know, if he's at your show.
I know, man. He's probably not going to hang. And then, let's see, Sunday, performing in the preliminary rounds of a Ventura comedy competition for the Ventura Comedy Festival. Then the 25th, performing at the Ice House in Pasadena. And then the 28th, performing in a new comedians showcase for the Ventura Comedy Festival.
Okay.
And then other shows, playing it by ear, depends on how I do in the preliminary rounds of the contest. Might be doing more shows next week, too. But I guess that's what I'm pumping. I don't know if this podcast will be up in time.
Definitely in time for the California show. So luckily we've got a good California audience. So
excellent.
So yeah, everybody get out to those.
Yeah, come out, support, cheer me on.
So and you're on Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter is at Andy A. Gold, and then Facebook, just type in Andy Gold. I'm one of the first to pop up on Facebook if you just type in my name.
Perfect.
So,
and for anybody that wants to, you know, be able to know what it looks like, I think you described it best as like a bully from a 90s Disney movie.
Did I hear that joke? Yes. I look like a bully. I look like an adult Dennis the Menace. I'm just a rosy-cheeked, ugly, fat fuck, dude. I hate my appearance very much. I really do. I'm so self-conscious about the way I look. Cabbage Patch doll.
I think I read you tweet the bit about looking like a 90s Disney movie bully, and I laughed so hard. I was just like, I never in a million years would have thought that.
Ugh.
But the profile picture you had at the time, just like, it set it perfectly.
You know, whenever I'm on stage, getting laughs is what I love the most. And that gets tons of laughs, and I'm happy about it. But I'm also like, ugh, geez. All you people just totally agreed with me in unison.
At least you have Twitter and that, though, to be able to pump up those jokes. Bit Jacob Lee opened with the other night. He actually didn't use that when he did open mic the last time I had. And I was like, dude, that seriously is a hilarious joke.
Which one is it?
About how he wants to see a homeless guy with no legs with a sign that says, just trying to get back on my feet.
Oh, that's funny.
So, and I did that absolutely no justice to how Jacob tells it. But,
yeah.
I mean, it is. I laughed so hard at that. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, he's built that up, and I think it's a great bit.
Yeah, he has some funny jokes, Jacob does.
He's a good dude. He is really funny.
Yes, he is.
So, well, thank you, Andy. I'm glad we caught you while you were still here in town. And best of luck.
Oh, my pleasure, man.
Best of luck at the Ventura Comedy Festival, and hopefully get into Seattle as well.
Yeah, let's hope. We'll see. But thank you for having me, dude. I had a fun time, dude.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So everybody go check him out, and enjoy.